Hi, welcome to the Max Show. Yes, we're at the new premises we have got here. We have no internet, so I'm using a 3 dongle.
Oh my gosh.
It's actually not doing too bad. We have rave 4G speeds here, but the problem is we can't get anyone to give us more than 100 gigabytes a month. And I use about 360 gigabytes a month. Using a wireless dongle just doesn't really work then. But everyone said I look really good in the broadcast. It's at 720p and it's clean and crisp and it looks excellent. So we're here.
You're looking better than me and I'm on bloody fibre.
We moved in. Yeah, which fibre though? Are you on BT fibre?
Yeah.
See, we had it. That's right, you boys joined us, by the way. Adam's here as well to discuss the week in Mac, but I haven't listened to any of the news for the last 2 weeks, so I need educating what's gone on. But no, we've
bring out my notes.
Yeah, bring out your notes for the last 2 weeks and on circus ponies, isn't it? So we went to BT, and BT came and visited me, which I was like, that's really cool. And a bloke turns up in a large Merc, and they offered me 7 megabits a second down and up. And it was something stupid, like 180 quid with a managed line from the exchange. And the best offer I got them at in the end was 100 down and 100 up for £275 plus VAT for a 5-year contract. And in the end, I went with, I'm a guest here, so I could get sent out on my ear. I've got no lease agreement or anything like that because I'm not paying any rent. I'm at a customer's. So a customer said to me, I need a load of years making and I can't afford them. Do you want to get out of your lease and come here rent free? Poof, yeah, all right, that's fine, no problem. So I haven't got an agreement with you or anything, but I think we'll be here for a while. Warwick Net stepped in and they said, we'll give you 80 down, 20 up, guaranteed speeds, £100 a month plus VAT, 500 gig limit. Sold. So we're all right, we're good. Joining me to discuss the week in Mac, Adam Christensen, how you doing, mate?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Yeah, good holiday?
Yeah, it was nice. It always is nice. I mean, it's the classic thing where, you go away and you have work and then you come back and you just have more work. And so It's a little bit hard. I even had to do some work while I was there. So
that's bad news. Next to him, it's Righty. How you doing, buddy?
Hello, mate. I've had better weeks, but then I tuned into the Max show and I thought, well,
you haven't been on the Mac show in ages. Well, since the bash show, mate. But
exactly. But I thought I'd go step in and help my buddy out.
Good man. We got no Doc, but Doc should be coming, maybe. I don't know. I've sent him a text and he's a Hawaiian, so who knows. The new studio. Who wants a quick tour?
Oh, please.
It's going to be very quick. It's going to be really quick. So let me just grab the camera here and turn it around. So I've got all the lighting up and everything. So that's the lighting for the blue screen with the baffles and everything. That's all been done. If you can hear that whirring away in the background, that's a security camera system for the whole premises. It's being moved, but it's not been moved yet, which is a bit of a pain in the arse. And then come in around here. So here's my desk looking out with all the stuff as it used to be. And then over there, that's the normal desk and everything. And a nice window. We've got loads of nice windows. We've put like an opaque covering on so no one can see in, but it's translucent. There's the normal camera. We're in a bit of a mess still. We're slowly unpacking, but tea and coffee and the beer fridge are all there, and that's Jake's desk. That's like a serving hatch, but we've closed that off. We're going to put a TV on the other side of there playing all our videos and stuff, and then it comes around and it points out, and that's our little reception area. And I don't know if you remember Holly.
Oh, yeah.
She's come with me. Well, I haven't got much cable. I can't see where I'm pointing.
Well, there she is.
Look out there. Holly's on the wall, as before. And then that goes through there. That door here. That door there. That takes us through into like a workshop area where they build up all the machines and stuff. And we go to the toilets through there. So that's that. And then my desk. I can't get far enough away, but there's my desk here. Back the way it was. Get back over. And then there's the lighting rig. There's the lighting rig all done.
You've done well.
Yeah, it's all decorated. This was all Magnolia when we moved in. So it's all blue, and all of the reception area out there is all blue as well.
Lovely.
So I'm well happy. Well happy. It was a good move. Good move for us. And it's we've got a decent special area. And also in the factory area, they want to build us a little studio, like a white room with an infinity curve and everything. So that'll be mine as well. I'll have my own studio. Life's good.
That works.
Ish. I've had better weeks, but it's all right. It's fine. It'll do. Well, what's gone? 2 weeks in Apple. The biggest story I picked up on while I was flicking through, Adam, fill in any time, sure. changes to iCloud put Apple on a collision course with governments seeking access to encrypted messages. So basically, I think Apple's decided that they're going to have end-to-end encryption with no backdoor keys or anything like that and be damned with it. And there's a quote that says, if a government comes forward and says, give us access to any iMessages, we'll be able to say no, because there is no physical way that even Apple can get into it. I can see this being a, especially in the UK, if Apple want to do business in the UK, they may start getting a bit fruity with them over it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's always been that backdoor thing, hasn't there? For, what, a couple of years now?
I don't know if Apple has even got a backdoor at the moment. I suppose there's ways of deconstructing and accessing, maybe, but...
Well, passcode. Yeah, they set a bit of precedent with the FBI thing saying no, didn't they? Because obviously any backdoor you create opens a backdoor to anyone. And I think they're just closing the door behind them to make sure that no one sneaks in.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it was my understanding they didn't have any kind of any backdoor. Hey, I don't know if the videos for me is working. It doesn't seem to be switching, so I don't know if you're getting my video or not.
We're seeing you just fine, mate.
Oh, good. Okay. It just doesn't feel like very much new. It's been pretty much Apple's standard policy that this was the direction they were moving in, and the more they can move in this direction, the more they're going to keep moving in that direction. You know, they put a high priority on privacy, and I think, you know, they're taking the tact of, look, we built the system, we don't have access to it, so, you know, it's really, they're moving it between the government and the person they're trying to, you know, really get at their data for, right? So they're trying to take themselves out of the equation so that they can't even be a part of it, which I think is probably the best move they can do. It's going to cause them a lot of problems, like you said, with certain governments, you know, probably the US government, probably the UK government. It sounds like they're dealing with stuff with Australia as well. So, you know, governments aren't going to like it, but as a consumer, I think it's absolutely what they should be doing.
Craig Ferengi said, it's encrypted with keys that Apple doesn't have, and so they can put things up into iCloud, they can pull stuff down from the iCloud, so iCloud serves as a conduit, and even ultimately as a kind of backup for them, but only they can read it.
Yeah. I mean, this is also important for, I mean... certain governments will actually like this, and more importantly, it also means that Apple's cloud services and cloud storage things will be able to be used in certain businesses and by certain customers who normally can't use cloud services. You know, it's potential that doctors and lawyers and stuff like that would be able to, you know, with review, would be able to actually use these systems because, again, as long as that data is kept secure just for them and Apple and nobody else can get into it, then... you know, they're not breaking any of their privacy agreements. This was always a problem with cloud storage services in the medical industry, right? And we do know that Apple's been pretty tight with HealthKit and ARKit and all that stuff. They want to do more stuff with medical. They want to do more stuff with the Apple Watch. So this could also just be a part of that, you know, wanting to be more in that business. And if they have this type of security, then those businesses can do that. And especially if they're going to be passing my health data around through their cloud, this is the kind of security I would want as a consumer.
Definitely. I forgot what I was going to say then. I was going to say something really profound and important, and I've completely forgot. Usual show.
It's the one differentiator they have, isn't it? Because you listen to any Apple keynote, and privacy is their thing, and it's the one comparison you can make against companies like Facebook and Google. I think that's really important for Apple, and as much as I'm kind of tired sometimes with Apple products, it is the I really enjoy, because I do go out of my way to be as private as I can. And in the last couple of weeks, I've removed myself from a lot of social media and things to tighten that up. And what Apple provide, and if they're tightening that up, makes me more attracted to the platform.
Yeah, I don't feel any problems with that. I've got any issues with iCloud or anything like that. I feel like it's the data's secure. But I've got a system called Dropzone that Anders wrote for me. So I can send customers photos or video, and they just send them a download link. And I click the download link, that's it. It starts coming down. And since the huge malware thing a few weeks ago, WeCry thing or whatever it was, just locked it down now. All the customers I had were like, oh, this is a great system, it's dead easy to use, we just call it down whenever we want. They've embedded the links in corporate documents so that when they send them out, the person can just click on the link and they know they can get the file down, and it's all certified as virus free and our certificates are right and everything. But since there, every system, every corporate system has gone, nope, you're not downloading anything off the net, nope, you can't put any thumb drives in, there's absolutely nothing happening. So if it really is that secure, but it doesn't stop them putting up viruses, does it? That's the trouble.
It's not going to stop, you know, someone from putting a virus infected file on their iCloud. It's just Apple won't be able to access it themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not about that. It's not about antivirus, anti-hacking security. This is more about personal privacy than anything else, at least this side of the equation. Obviously they have other tools and things to help protect their cloud from viruses and hackers and stuff like that, but this is really about just protecting the security and the privacy of your data.
A corporation's still not going to use it though, because of the fact that the IT departments can't therefore get access to it either. User will have their own thing going on, and I would have thought that might be a Sarbanes-Oxley kind of inhibitor as well, based on Enron stuff about backdoor dealings and keeping them under massive encryptions that then couldn't be discovered.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a difference between, you know, large corporations are never going to be probably using iCloud unless Apple builds out some sort of corporate system and sells that. And maybe they partner with someone they've partnered with IBM in the past to kind of deploy those kinds of solutions. So I don't think, as far as I know, I don't think they have those kinds of initiatives going. I think this is more about, you know, on the business side of things, smaller businesses, you know, individual doctors, you know, but, you know, potentially also large healthcare systems with the health kit stuff, at least. I mean, that stuff is going through Apple's servers at some point. So, you know, I guess that is in a way a different system, but, you know, the general, like what we buy as iCloud storage, I think is more on the consumer side of things, but, you know, there are smaller to medium-sized businesses that also will use those technologies and I think feel more comfortable because of the privacy versus something like Google or an Amazon or something like that. But you know, even those guys are also in this game too, and at certain levels, and they're also changing some of their policies. I don't know if you saw, I think it was last week or a couple weeks ago, Google's going to stop with Gmail is going to stop scanning for, you know, keywords for advertising in your emails. So you know, I think consumers are coming out and saying, look, we value our privacy. I don't know if it's more than we used to, but hey, you guys have you've moved way too far, and you know, we want some changes. And Apple's always been on, you know, the far edge of, we value and put our consumers' privacy above, you know, any of these other things, even at the detriment of some services and some conveniences.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Well done, Apple. HomeKit is available to try at dozens of Apple stores around the world. You can go and have a go with the interactive HomeKit demos. They've got iPads, iPhones, watches, and that kind of stuff laid out for you to sit and play with. And I watched this story, and I thought, fantastic. That is the best thing that they could have done, because you go HomeKit to a lot of people, and I'm not particularly great on the technology front, but I'm no slouch, and I could work HomeKit out, I'm sure, but there's a bit of me just doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. Me Wemo app, it just starts me radiators at the office and that with this, you know, but I think if I went into a store and I saw easy use and then someone was there to say, well, this is how you make that happen, I'd be more likely to come towards HomeKit. Because at the moment, when someone says HomeKit to me, I just glaze over.
I think when you say home automation as a whole, people glaze over, because I talk to a lot of people at work about the home automation I've got here through the Amazon little box. Won't say a name, but they're like, well, why would I want to do that? And then you just explain the simple things of, you know, a bit OCD in my house, so it's turning all the lights off, making sure the doors are locked and all that. It does just be a go to bed and go lights off, door locked, all of those sort of things. And it makes life very simple. And just, it's not such a home automation thing, but I'm going to see my gran on Saturday. And she's 90 years old, she's blind. And my uncle who lives with her, he was in hospital for a few days and she couldn't work the radios, the TV, anything. So she went to bed at like 4 in the afternoon. I was like, oh, you poor dear. So I sat here last Saturday with my Amazon and I got to talk to it, said, play this radio station, do this, do that. Understood every word she said.
Yeah.
And she's like, I need to have that in my life, because she can't see screens or panels or anything like that. But if you could do that and get it to turn her lights off for her, or lock her door for her, she's going to feel a lot more secure as well.
I got an Amazon Echo for my parents at Christmas, and they adore it. They use it every single day. They ask the weather forecast, they ask it to play music, and it's all linked to my Prime account, so they get the music Prime as well. So but they wouldn't, whether they use it to switch lights on and off, that would work for them eventually.
Yeah, it's more the case for my Nan, because she is blind, you know, it's hard for her to tell if things are happening. But if obviously I can wire that up when I've bought the Echo for her, and I'm going to wire up at the weekend, or tomorrow actually, if she could be kind of reassured, and she did have a really good go with it, that it could do a lot of the things that it needs to do, and I can monitor that for her, it's going to change her life. You just ask them what the weather is. And the big thing for her, not being able to see a clock, is just ask them what the time is.
Adam, have you got HomeKit ubiquitously around the house, or are the family resisted?
A little bit. My problem was, here's the problem with HomeKit. HomeKit is awesome when it works the way it's supposed to work. But I think, and I don't know if this is an Apple problem, I don't know if this is, when suppliers kind of don't implement it well, it causes problems. And I think that's what Apple is sort of working on. And I think that's part of what, you know, putting it in their stores and picking the right good products that have been implemented well to demo and show people. Because it should be as simple as I bring whatever integration device into my house, I plug it in, I hook it up. If it's a light, I you know, install it into my door. If it's a lock, whatever it might be, and then it just works. You know, it just pairs up. It is part of the HomeKit ecosystem. I use the built-in home app on my phone, and everything just works. And a lot of devices work that way. For my HomeKit, I went with Insteon, and they were one of the first in, and that's why I chose them. But I think because they were one of the first in, they've really fragmented like how it works. So like the hub that I have only works with HomeKit. And so when I added in my Amazon Echoes, it's like I can integrate my light system with that. But guess what? I need a different hub for that. And that hub doesn't work with HomeKit. And so it's like it's this big, giant nightmare.
Is this an exclusivity thing, though? Is that an exclusivity thing where people say, sign with us, not with the others? Or is it just because it's development
time? It's just bad implementation. It's lazy. You know, I think it's really on the – and this is the problem that home automation has always had. It's like – nobody wants to play ball with anybody else's system, but it's not an Apple requiring exclusivity. It's the manufacturer of the end, you know, the product on the other side making choices, because what I'm considering switching to, and luckily I haven't heavily invested yet. I only bought a couple of in-wall light switches is basically what I have. I'm trying to think what other HomeKit devices. I think those are the only real HomeKit devices that I have in my house, just because I've been kind of tentative about, you know, wanting everything to integrate. So iDevices makes in-wall switches and other products, and they don't require any hub, and they work with everything. They work with Google Home, they work with HomeKit, and they work with Amazon out of the box. So I'm really considering switching to their in-wall switches and stuff like that. So I'm looking at those. So and so again, I think what Apple's doing in the store is all about that. It's about exactly like you said, Ewan, being able to go in, they can show you stuff that works the way it's supposed to work. And that's what you're buying when you're leaving an Apple store. The problem is if I walk into Home Depot or some other place, it's very confusing to the consumer. And a lot of times you can wind up with a HomeKit device that only works with HomeKit. And that is a little bit limiting. But again, I think it's on the manufacturer side. And I think that's why Amazon is getting a little bit of an edge, because it seems like a lot of these companies are more willing to play with Amazon because of their openness. But for me, on the Amazon side of things, with the trouble I've had with it is, to me, the whole thing just feels really clunky and kludgy. This, like you have to install all these different apps and what do they call them? Alexa, what do they call the little apps that you install for Alexa thing?
Skills.
Yeah. And they've all just kind of felt a little clunky and kludgy. I've played around with them a little bit, but that feels confusing. It's not plug and play simple. And HomeKit really does deliver that promise when it works.
Yeah.
So it's done right the way that Apple envisioned it. It's great. When it's not, when it's implemented poorly, and that, that may be on Apple. I mean, maybe Apple hasn't exerted enough control over there, but I think the reason they haven't is they ran into problems right away with that. The chips themselves that are required are a problem for some manufacturers. And that's all about security and privacy. What people don't realize with Internet of Things devices is that a lot of the ones that they're buying are infinitely hackable. They've got poorly implemented security. They've got, so that's the problem when you're outside of HomeKit, I think, is a lot of companies that are more open. And this is not an Amazon or a Google thing. This is that they're just being open about what works with their system, and they're letting the manufacturers make decisions about, where they're going to set security, privacy, and all those sorts of things. And some do it well and some don't. And the consumer really has no way of knowing when they're buying a device, if it's got good security or bad security or whatnot. Yeah. So Apple tried to take that out of the equation with HomeKit. And that, again, has bit them. It's limited them in their ability to grow. But again, as a consumer who's knowledgeable about it, it's important to me. So I will probably stick with HomeKit again, because I think it's a more secure, safe system than some of the other ones that are out there.
Yeah. As an aside from what we said at the start of this, is the fact that you can go into the stores and see this stuff. Now, I've lived in my house for 7 years now, and I live it in a cul-de-sac at the end of a lot of old age pensioners who never really got into IT. And since I've lived here, I've become like the IT guy, as you always do, that us guys do where we live. A lot of them in turn have got, broadband and all those sort of things, and I always found that the iPad was a great device to get them onto having a personal computing device. Now what I could have done is just bought an iPad from online and given it to them and said, away you go. But every time we buy one, I take them to the Apple store in Norwich so that they can deal with Apple rep, because obviously I'm not here for 8 hours a day and all that sort of stuff. And so they realize there's a human in the city that they live, that if they do have a problem, they can go in. And I think that tears down some of the boundaries of buying Apple Kit. That retail experience is really valuable.
Yeah. No, it's the thing that's quite interesting is it triggers videos of the lights going on and off on the videos in the thing. But Rob in the chat room, in Slack room, he installs home automation for his living. And he says, I have the same issues with the kit I install. So this is even at the pro level. Integration for the smart home kit is hard work. Bad luck. Latest report claims that new iPhone models are facing long production delays. However, there's also another story, which is kind of full feel good one, which says Apple leasing equipment suppliers to make sure that iPhone components get made. They're spending tens of millions of dollars to help suppliers make sure that parts are being made for iPhone 8 delivery. But what's the gut feeling? We're going to have to wait, or we're going to get it when we want it?
It's just going to be bad. Just everybody know right now, if you want an iPhone 8, you may not be getting it this year.
Yeah. So you're talking past Christmas.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's going to be back ordered into January in hours is my prediction. And Apple may catch up and ship some earlier, you know, like you might have a far out ship date, but just be prepared that it's everything that has been indicated. I mean, you think it's been bad in the past, the number of reports and the number of various components we're hearing that Apple is having supply chain issues with is far greater than any other iPhone launch that I can remember covering. So, you know, as much as they're going to try to do as much as they can, there's just too many new components in this thing. I mean, it's a revolutionary new phone in terms of all of the components. You've got a brand new screen, you've got brand new camera sensors, you've got brand new, you know, processing sensors. It's just, or processing chips. It's just, I mean, it's a logistical nightmare for Apple. I can't even imagine what they're going through. Almost to the point where it feels to me like they should have probably just delayed the launch, but because of how the media cycle is and how Wall Street is, I don't think they felt that they could. Yeah. You know, it would just wreak havoc on the stock price. So they're going to deal with what they've always dealt with, and which is short supply, which really ultimately doesn't hurt them too much. It just makes demand really go higher. So, you know, look at the Apple Pencil. I mean, they're still struggling with Apple Pencil, but that's still, you know, AirPods.
Yeah.
Right.
AirPods, yeah.
People still are clamoring for AirPods and they're still selling
them. Still a 6-week delay.
Yeah. But they sell them as fast as they can make them and they're making money off of them. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's probably better for the bottom line and better for the stock price if they just launch and are completely supply constrained. Consumers are going to be pissed, but consumers get over it.
Yeah. I think there's going to be, I've got to say, my gut feeling is that this could be new depths or heights of push out dates. I think this is where it's going to go really, really mental.
Well, yeah. I mean,
because I think a lot of people held off on 7, thinking that there was going to be a 10-year anniversary version. So they deliberately held off on 7. And so even 7 demand was huge.
They take a beating in the media for it. The thing is they would take a worse beating if they delayed until next year.
But yeah. Is it good for them to wait? Because the last year, the MacBook Pro with the touch bar wasn't really the one they wanted to release. Because obviously WWDC, they then went, oh, we've got another one. Now, which is probably the one that you do want. You know, sometimes there is this, maybe, you know, they did that with the iPad 3 to iPad 4 thing where they release something and you're like, well, I've just bought that and now you're telling me something better. I'd rather wait longer. And I've got an iPhone 6 here, which is just holding on by the skin of his teeth, waiting for whatever this phone is, which I think is this whatever iPhone 7S or 8 is going to be the one that we're all going to buy. So it is going to you know, jack up the wait times on them. But do you think that they're going to fall short and they have a backup plan of just a 7S to say there's a new iPhone this year?
I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll stay on cycle. The one other thing that I would warn consumers about, again, because there's so many new unproven components in this, I guarantee you there's going to be some batch or something, some component in some phones that's going to give them some trouble, you know, because they use different suppliers for different components, even the same component. And, you know, where we've had, you remember this has happened in the past where, you know, somebody got phones and the screens were yellow and it turned out to be, you know, glue not drying fast enough. But there's going to be some component that is going to give some batch of these things a problem and they're going to take flack for that too. You know, there's going to be a quality assurance problem. And it's just because there's so many variables, you know, and it's probably going to be isolated and it's probably going to be small, but the media is going to blow it out of proportion. And all these things are going to happen because you have a really brand new design from the inside out. So,
well, there are talk of that there is panic amongst some quarters within Apple.
Oh,
launches. There's been a few things on Mac Rumors that said there was panic.
I think there's I think there's panic and worry. You know, I'm sure Apple's worried and concerned about it. I'm sure they have thought a lot of this through. You know, this has all been talked about. We're talking about it now, but I can guarantee you they've been discussing these things for months, and there's been, you know, meetings with engineers and everything. And, you know, they're going to be just fine. Like I said, there's going to be problems. Things are going to happen. There's going to be shortages. They're just going to deal with it on the media level. And again, I think ultimately the reverse, if they said, look, we're not launching the iPhone until 2018, that would be devastating, especially in the holiday quarter, because they're going to take the pre-sales, and they're still going to have the orders, and people aren't going to cancel their orders. And again, there's going to be a demand frenzy for this phone. Everybody's been waiting on it. Mm. So they'll just deal with that, and they'll probably ramp up production. Again, you'll get a late
date. Well, they're obviously trying.
They'll get some out early, and some people will get them later, but it's really,
I mean, if this story is to be believed, about tens of millions of dollars of investment for supporting companies and suppliers for delivery of components, Apple are serious about solving the problem. This is not a branding exercise of making exclusivity and that kind of stuff. They I think they realize they do have a problem.
But to me, tens of millions actually sounds like not a lot of money in Apple terms. Surely if you want to get...
If you're tooling up.
I think if you really want to get this phone out at the right time, to the right audience with the right kind of fanfare, it's a $1 billion investment.
No. Right. So this isn't investing in the equipment this isn't giving the supply chain raw materials. This is helping them develop machines that will improve and control production. So you're not talking vast amounts of raw material here. It's just a tooling machine exercise and probably a Kaizen study kind of exercise to help them be more efficient.
Yeah, they're giving them money for R&D, money for machine. I think some of the money is going into adding additional machines and adding additional capabilities into certain suppliers, you know. And again, these investments are not, it's not Apple just giving these people this money too. I can almost guarantee you these are like quick loans. Hey, we need you to be able to ramp up your volume. The supplier goes, well, we don't have the money to add three new machines. And Apple goes, okay, well, we'll give you the money once you get through production. You know, we want a better deal on the contract, or they're going to get the money back in some other way, right? Whether it's, you know, through payments from the supplier, whatever it might be. So this is just, hey, we need you to be able to do more. And the supplier is probably going, well, we just don't have more capacity. We're at full capacity. And Apple going, okay, well, how do we solve this problem? It's like, well, we'll throw some money at that. And you know, who knows if they can fit these into the, I'm assuming a lot of this is just if fitting new machines into existing facilities, because they've also made investments in, you know, the display companies in expanding out their OLED capacities, but that's not going to happen until, you know, 2019, 2020, because they're building brand new factories. And that's a more long-term game. This is a short-term, how do we solve this short-term supply problem?
Yeah. And Paul Dixon in the chat room suggesting that this is one of the reasons that they're putting the 18 and the 7S potentially, which is rumored still, but it means that the 7S will be far easier to get.
But maybe not, because the rumor is all of these models may have OLED displays. I mean, that's one of the rumors that's out there, and that's one of the components that's been a little bit of a problem.
Yeah. Steve Jobs opera premieres in Santa Fe this Saturday. Are you going, Adam?
In where?
Santa Fe. It's California. It's New Mexico. It's only over the border.
I was going to say, that's New Mexico. No.
The opera's been developed since 2015, created by electronica DJ Mason Bates and librettist Mark Campbell, and tells the story of Jobs and his struggle to balance life, family, and work, set to the live orchestral accompaniment of guitar, natural sounds, and expressive electronics, including Apple's own devices.
Sounds like it'd be fun.
It should be, shouldn't it? Yeah. That'd be cool.
I would go. If they start touring it, I might go.
Santa Fe is definitely off Broadway, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're only going to do a short podcast today because I'm on a dongle and it's holding up pretty well, actually. I don't think I'd be able to stream. I thought we'd drop it back left, right and centre, but it seems to be doing okay. But we'll be back again, hopefully. Touch wood, the being installed here on Wednesday, which means next Friday, everything will be back to normal. We've got all the beer bench set up and we've got all of the beer fridge filled and we'll be back to the same usual japes and it'll be all right. Monday and Tuesday of next week, guess what? I am going to Hoya. Face measured, it is the Yaniku trip. So I'll be picking up my lenses for driving to do review on those as well. And also I'm going to get my face measured ready for me Hoya glasses for Yaniku. I know the ones I want to pick, but we'll see what they advise me to have anyway. So I'm really excited. We'll take a film of the whole thing and we'll show it on the feeds and stuff like that. And please support UK too. They've just renewed our servers again. They're already into us for another 9 years anyway. So thanks to them. And please, please, please support them. If you want anything through the web, please go in and have a look. And we've got some banners up for SSDs at the moment. Some of their services with SSDs, which are lightning fast. So check out UK2. And support them as well. Do we have a cool thing, Adam, or not?
I do. Yeah. Actually, I really do.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to give you actually two because one I watched last night and it's on Apple Trailers. Did you guys see the Last Jedi thing that they released at the D23 conference? Disney had their big conference. It was like a behind the scenes kind of video. Mm-hmm. It's excellent. It's up on Apple Trailers. If you're at all interested in Star Wars, you should watch it. It got me really excited about the new film. It looks like it's going to be awesome. But my real pick is a game that I just discovered, and I have no idea actually how to play it, to be honest, but it is amazing in terms of the graphics and in terms of the whole concept and stuff like that. If you're an engineer, you may be good at this. The game is called Polybridge. Do you guys know this game?
No.
So the idea is it's a 3D kind of physics puzzle game, and what you're trying to do is build bridges. So you have kind of a budget, and you have materials, and then you're given a scenario, and you've got a couple cars on one side, either cars or motorcycles or things like that, and then you're trying to get the cars and motorcycles to the other side by drawing with your finger bridges, and you get little access points that you can connect support structures to. So you draw the roadway, and then you've got to kind of put a support structure around it. And then you hit play, and you see how well you've done, and they give you some feedback on, okay, you know, your structure is supporting X amount of weight, and the cars will either spectacularly fall into the gorge, or they'll actually make it across, and then you pass the level, and you get sort of a ranking and a rating. And I want to say it was $4.99. There's no in-app purchase, nothing like that. It's just buy and play. I've only gotten through a few levels and I'm totally stuck. So it starts out relatively easy, but it gets harder and harder. It's just been a lot of fun and it's just hilarious. It cracks me up every time. And sometimes you won't be able to get across the gap and you'll actually have to just like build a ramp or a jump and like jump the vehicles and stuff like that. So it's got this really cool 3D poly kind of animated style look to it. And I'm just having a lot of fun playing it. Although, again, I have no idea what I'm doing and I don't know if I'll be able to get past. I've made it to about the sixth or seventh level and I'm totally stuck, which is kind of fun, actually. It's really challenging. And it's even just fun to like see again how spectacularly your structure fails. And there is a game mode, and then there's also just a sandbox mode if you just want to do goofy, you know, like physics things and stuff like that. So it's called Polybridge.
Polybridge.
And I want to say it was $4.99. It might have been $3.99. They've had some specials on it, but I think it's $3.99.
It's $4.99 here.
$4.99, but a lot of fun and really worth it. And I think you can kind of video and share your solutions and stuff like that too. So I haven't gotten into any of that, but
I like that. Good one, Ricey. Yeah. Have you got a cool thing?
Yep, I have. In the same way that I left my podcasting mic at work this weekend, the weekend before, I left my production Mac at work. And I wanted to do a lot of the kind of creative stuff that I do on a weekend, just knocking things out. As a designer, I have a subscription to Adobe Creative Cloud. So I did a bit of investigation into the iOS apps that they've got. So I've tried like Illustrator and all those sort of things. But the one that really stood out for me is Photoshop Mix.
Right.
So really simple. It's kind of a cut down Photoshop thing. But what you can do, it gives you multiple layers and stuff. You can mix certain images together and you can blend them. You can put certain looks across them, all that sort of thing. Add text and all of that. So it does a lot of things that some of the photo apps do, like Instagram and all that sort of thing. But I found that, so I've got a few things here that I've done where I've just merged a few things together. And I just found that it was actually really easy to use, really easy to cut things out, to layer things. So cool. If you do have, you do have to have an Adobe subscription to use it. It's not one of the free ones, but if you've got it and you just want to play about with images on your phone, it's a really great little app.
Nice one. Cutting out something that still isn't brilliant in a lot of applications. So if it's made easier in that, then that's good.
Yeah, you just run your finger over it. It's got intelligent selection and addition and subtraction. So if you get it wrong, you can add a bit back in and take a bit out, and the blend modes and the filters. It's almost like Instagram on steroids, if you know. And then you can obviously post it to things like Instagram and Facebook and do what you like. And I'll put those on Instagram now, and I'm getting a lot of really good feedback.
Good. Excellent, mate. Well done. My cool thing is Monument Valley 2. I never played Monument Valley when it was released, and I bought the version, not the free version. I bought the version out after it was made free anyway. And I played that. My kids adore it. They absolutely love it. So they've been badgering me to get Monument Valley 2. And I thought, I need to check out what this is first, because I didn't even know what it was at all. And it's brilliant. I love Escher. He's a guy that did a load of drawings that really screw with perspective and your sense of reality. And it's very Escher-like in the way that it's played. It's absolutely gorgeous. Definitely get it. And two is brilliant because you get two characters to move around. And that can get really... I got into one level. It was just like, oh, I've had enough of this. And I switched it off. And it... When you start, there's a couple of levels that are definitely morning motion friendly, but once you're into sort of 5 and 6 levels of version 2, there's a few of them that they're a bit long. Your legs are a bit numb.
There's a queue at the bathroom door.
There is, yeah. But Monument Valley 2, well worth the cash. Well, worth
we love those games here.
Yeah. Where can we get a hold of you, Adam?
You can find me, as always, over at maccast.com, or just for the Maccast on iTunes. Also, occasionally, although this summer it's been a little less frequently, the iOS show at theiosshow.com if you're more into iOS stuff.
According to Paul Dixon in the chat room, there's a Steam version of Polybridge for Mac as well. And it's awesome. Said it looks really, really good.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really challenging. Again, I don't know how realistic the actual physics are, but it's fun.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Righty, where are you, boy?
You'll find me over at BTN in the Slack room. Done a bit of moving around on social media and stuff. I've now moved to Instagram permanently and dropped Facebook. So you'll find me on Instagram at paulums_UK.
Excellent, mate. And while I've been doing this show, right, I've had some stuff to send to customers. I've uploaded 300 meg of video and audio to the thing. So well done, 3, for your card. Well done. Good service, mate. Thank you very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Next week, that was the first show from this venue. How cool's that? But next week, we'll be back to normal. We'll have all the proper cameras and stuff running, and we'll have all the audio doing, all the Macs will be on, and it'll fall over like it used to at the old place.
Sweet.
It's far better, isn't it? This has actually run fairly well. That's an omen in it. So we'll be back on Google Hangouts the week after that. So. Thanks very much for sticking with us. Sorry we haven't had a show for a few weeks, but we are back now, and we'll see you in the weeks to come. Thanks for listening.